as unit. Did it not, was it not rolling? Zero. Square.
We
Well,
see what
we
oh,
can,
okay.
if we could just, I would just like to hear myself from planning commissioners if they expected to have something, a new recommendation come from staff and go directly to commerce without you all weighing in.
No change, but speaking for myself, we were I thought we were pretty clear on we're not changing base standards.
That was a part of the formal motions.
We
But
were
I
we
think.
weren't changing the base standards for height. I don't know that
Correct.
we were quite as clear about FAR.
I think we only, but I think our motions only changed the FAR if it included affordable housing.
That's
But
yeah.
you had separate motions for staff to return with that, because, so keep in mind, our existing code in our mixed-use districts allows for one additional story of height right now if you're doing underbuilding parking with no additional FAR available. But there are other ways of achieving bonus FAR. There used to be more in our code than there are at this time, right? Now there's kind of scaled back.
We reduced it to affordability for all
And
practical purposes.
historic buildings and ferry parking, relocating ferry parking below ground are the current temporarily used ways to earn bonus FAR in town. So the motion from the Planning Commission was for staff to return to with a tiered approach for what that, not the bonus FAR, but what the FAR should be. And so working with LM, we wanted to hold the residential FAR at the existing base residential FAR provisions, which in the high school road zone is 0.3, and in the Erickson and Madison districts is 0.3, and in the core is 0.4. So if you ran the, if you did the analysis for all the properties that wouldn't use the voluntary inclusionary zoning program and get the bonus, keeping existing base FAR at the levels it is today, it's like 0.3 in the high school zone, was not enough to create enough multifamily building type units. So we propose, so you'll see in the summary, we propose increasing permitted base FAR, not as high as it is under the current max, but above what it, the current base residential is, which seemed to be, since it's already able to be built under today's provisions, that seems, and it produced enough multifamily capacity to plan for our number of required lower income units. So that we could demonstrate that we were planning for enough of those types of mid-rise and low-rise multifamily buildings.
So I'm looking at the table of our motions, and I'm scanning quickly, and but this matches my recollection is that we only asked for the tiered rate structure for ferry and high school, and with the goal is set with the goal of incentivizing smaller unit sizes. Because we had this discussion when we were talking about the 4.0, that there were some commissioners believed that just having higher FAR would produce smaller units. And some of us did not agree that just doing that would do that. And so I made this motion thinking of Sammamish's tiered structure where the FAR only went up as you produced more units to keep them so you don't have just more FAR, but just a bunch of big penthouses looking over Eagle Harbor. So if I'm only seeing it for those two zones and specifically called out with the purpose of incentivizing smaller unit sizes. And I know in our meeting I mentioned the code in Sammamish as an example of what I, because I made the motion of what I was speaking to. And so I have believed all along, and I have represented the people that we did not change any base zoning except for Ferncliff, but you guys changed that. Council changed that, that we did not make any changes to base zoning, that the only increases were coming when affordable housing was included.
That was kind of like the through line of the past year, you know, where we were lining up, especially towards the end of the year.
Well, I just want to say, I mean, again, going back to why we restricted FAR increases to affordability for most cases, I mean, I understand there's a few trailing,
But that's kind of keys into all of this, and that is that it was like, let's put a hold on this, because the one thing, at least at that point, the council felt comfortable increasing density for was affordability. So,
and then I would say the other part that stands out is the where the Deer Cliff project was proposed. We changed that from R to FAR, but I know that I was specifically had that parcel in mind when we asked for you guys to come back with a recommendation for a mandatory program for a project that would have was larger scale, that especially since they got a zoning change, they should be
required. I want to say, have a great day.
Mike, it seems like there's a good pause if you want to speak up.
Yeah, I just think that I think everyone's bringing up exactly what I was thinking, which is it seemed like the intent really was not to change base FAR. And I think it was Peter talking at the last meeting saying that, you know, that was part of the reason you guys went with voluntary and community zoning instead of mandatory, was this idea is that if you did mandatory, you would have to increase base FAR to make it work at all. And I think I think everybody's basically been saying we only want to upzone to the extent we need to comply with 1220 and our affordable housing requirements. I'm a little disappointed by this, I guess is what I would say. And then the second thing I wanted to ask Chair Blossom, as you mentioned, a number in the materials. Where is the number in the materials that shows how many are sort of in process or count towards?
What I was looking at was in the Planning Commission packet for Thursday.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was looking at.
In the Winslow land capacity analysis.
Uh-huh.
When I open up just that item, it says it's page 6 of 28.
Page 6 of 28. Okay, thank you. Yeah, because if it's 1,000 more than we need, it kind of says to me that the amount that counted based off of voluntary inclusionary zoning was probably not very many at all, because we already have like, what, 100 units in process, or we're supposed to do like 1,139. So anyway, those were my comments. I think a lot of us feel that there shouldn't have been an increase in base FAR, and that we really should be only upzoning for affordable housing. Thank you.
So to be clear here, I'm looking at the land capacity analysis that's included in the Planning Commission packet versus what I had written down originally as our current standards for base FAR. It's really only Ferry and High School that are getting the base changes. Ferry from 0.5 to 1. And High School from 0.3 to 1.
What page are you looking at?
Yeah. Sorry. In the land capacity analysis, it's page 4. So,
actually,
I'm sorry.
And actually, I think you could look at the mix, what the mixed use change is. So, I think the high school road mixed use is at 0.5 or 0.6, not current max mixed use. And actually, the current core district max, like the base mixed use is in the core district is 1.
Yeah, so core is not changing.
So,
I'm just trying to identify it's just Ferry and high school that I'm seeing changes on based on comparing my notes.
Let me open up the current code.
I'm just trying to make just
well,
like
while she's looking up, just to because another item on this agenda is talk about the guiding principles. We can always, if we don't have enough time.
I think that's important to get to.
Yeah.
This is just surprising.
I think what's concerning is that this is our shot at compliance, reaching compliance or preliminary compliance with commerce. So if we're going to commerce with policies that were not signed off on even by the Planning Commission, that's a concern. And we're getting backed into something where we're going to have had our shot at compliance with that, with our review by them. And where does that leave us with regards to making changes?
Well, you know, we talked to Commerce about that, saying there's been some elements that that the Planning Commission hasn't had scheduled to review. They said, send us what you have. We understand that they will be sent as updates.
But this is not what you have. This is not what the Planning Commission recommended, what you're talking about. Even if it feels like little FAR changes, there's been a lot of process, a lot of public process that we're relying on. And a different product has been taken to Commerce, and that's concerning.
So we can continue to talk about this, and then if we don't have enough time for the guiding principles to finish up. And
well, I don't know how much more there is to talk about. We've discovered that there's an issue.
Yeah.
We can confront the fact that it's problematic. There's not much we can do at the moment, and we can hear from you what we can do to pivot. But
isn't it true though that the next iteration of this could say, you know, this base that's been increased could be only an increase under certain conditions.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So in other words, the land capacity probably wouldn't change, although it might change the incentives. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at typology numbers that would get us to 1220. But it hasn't been signed off on. It hasn't been processed by planning commission
or by council, right?
Right.
But there's a fundamental difference between typology focus and typology connected to affordability, and we're kind of missing that boat right now. So yes,
no, I understand. That's
actually
what
make a stronger plan at that point. But right now we're out there. Here's what we got, and what we've got is unit numbers, maybe size, expected size, and density, but with them kind of floating around here are programs that may or may not ever intersect.
Well, what I'm saying is that we're kind of being given we're being given a number. The capacity is giving us a number that says, you know, we'll likely pass with 1220. If we want to add conditions on that number, you know, with mandatory inclusionary or whatever it is, we can do that. That's still within our.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
So it's like a goal, so, right? It's like we have to hit this goal. Right now, it's been hit by a base FAR change. But, you know, there would still be other policy that we could apply to it.
Correct. And, you know, in what comes out of the Planning Commission or the Council, and just to. Yes, the current base mixed-use FAR for the zones that basically became the connection zones is 0.5, so that was not proposed to change. The core district didn't change the current base mixed-use FAR as one. So the ferry base mixed-use FAR is 0.5, so that's proposed to increase to 1. And for high school from 0.3 to 1. So for the base FAR. But those are still kind of within the realm of what's the existing max mixed use FAR in the high school zone, for instance, is already 0.9.
If we're going to increase the base that much, then we should just have a mandatory program for the.
That's what I was thinking. Like, are you suggesting that one way to move forward here is to take the new bases that we have for Ferry and high school and institute a mandatory inclusionary zoning requirement for those two districts?
I mean, if that's what we want, right? But it's adding a policy onto those base.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that change the calculus, though? I mean, that just because something can get built.
That's a significant change for high school, though. If it's 0.3 now going to 1.
Yeah.
Well, it's 0.5 for mixed-use FAR. For base mixed-use FAR, it's 0.5. A residential FAR is 0.3.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like our increase in height was a little disingenuous if we're not allowing the FAR to accommodate that, right? Like,
that's in the bonus. He only increased height
for bonus,
not for base. We made no base changes.
But you didn't make a recommendation on base. So we look to see what would be a good base that could help us create enough multifamily building type capacity without really going out of the realm of what is currently on the books today.
So what is layered into this base change that incentivizes smaller units? Because that's what the motion
Well, the, that
what date was
that? Wasn't the motion was on December 4th or 11th.
When you, if you go to our packet later.
Okay, it's page. Yeah, December 11th. I move to have the consultants bring back a recommendation for a tiered floor area ratio system for the ferry zone with the goal of incentivizing smaller unit sizes. And then the exact same motion was made for high school, a separate motion.
So we can put the provisions as far as a mix of unit sizes into the code. But what was what would have been very difficult would be to have more than two tiers to run for the land capacity analysis.
So Sammamish did that, and theirs is approved, right? I mean, they're done.
Right. Well, they might have more than one tier, but I don't know how they did their land capacity analysis. And as far as like how much developable
that's why I area they mentioned them at the meeting is this is. Is the maker of the motion, this is what I'm thinking, is something similar to what Sammamish did to incentivize this tiered structure that incentivizes smaller units.
Which is kind of what we have in our HGDP program.
But this originally. Isn't HGDP.
Right, but so we can add those details into the code and how it's administered, but the FAR and how you break it up, we used an average unit size anyway throughout the to do the numbers. We didn't run the numbers with three different unit sizes. We used an average of 850 to account for really small units. And you know, some of them are 1200, 1500 square feet. So that's the same mixed use average unit size that we used in the 2021 BLR. So we just stuck with that.
It's just procedurally, if the motion was to bring back a tiered system that incentivizes smaller unit sizes.
I can make sure to do that in the draft code update.
But the bottom line is, again, that's the closest thing I'm hearing towards maybe massaging this into somewhat more affordable housing. And so what drives me crazy is how much time has been spent on this process worrying about unit type and size, et cetera, even size. But I mean, without the affordability component on an island that has such an incredible amount of demand, that unless these are some amazing bonus programs we haven't seen yet, there's how are we convincing commerce that these are going to not just be market rate units that we're up to?
Well, the Planning Commission said to come up with a provision to allow the maximum bonus for 100% projects below 80% without the underground parking provisions. So so that we have something on the books that would allow the flexibility for a nonprofit or public projects should they come
about. But why would the private owners who own those parcels now want to sell those to a nonprofit to do that rather than just build the units? Which is, I mean, we haven't been doing that in the past. I can say this in all clean consciousness because I have argued that we should tie up zonings to affordability. So there's a very simple answer, which is you don't give the additional capacity unless there's affordability.
Yeah.
So it's kind of frustrating because we're not, our hands are not as tight as that. We don't have to give, as a matter of right, huge capacity or additional capacity to private landowners. So that maybe we'll be lucky enough to find the funding to buy the parcel from them.
But the maximum bonus recommended by the Planning Commission for each zone wouldn't be available unless there is at least 25% or 20% in the connection zone below 80% or 100% affordable project.
But there are increases in base for high school and ferry without any affordable housing.
That's where the hang of this.
Without
but
any
but a point
income
five
verified
increase.
Affordable housing, yeah. Right? Capital A affordable
but
housing.
But like a 0.5 FAR increase, which is, you know, like a two-story building. A 0.5 FAR increase compared to a 3 increase in those two zones.
Mike, you've had your hand up for quite a while.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to express frustration at sort of unilaterally doubling or tripling FAR, base FAR, when I think the intent was pretty clear not to increase base FAR. And you're talking about the sort of programs where you know, if it's 80% AMI and below, or it's 100% AMI and below, and where it'll get that max FAR for high school. And I mean, that begs the question: why would we need to increase the base? That's what I was trying to get at. Sorry, I'm just not understanding this, and it feels like backing into policy. Like, okay, we decided to unilaterally do this on the staff side, and now we're all sitting around here trying to justify how it can be used to get at the policy we were trying to get at in the first place. And so I really think part of the purpose of this committee is to flag policy issues for council and for the planning commission. And I want to flag this as a policy issue for council and the planning commission. I don't think that this should be made and then try to justify it later. This decision should be made and try to justify it later, because the problem also is if you add inclusionary zoning, whether mandatory or voluntary, it changes the calculation of the land capacity analysis. So you can't just sort of say, this is the land capacity analysis, now let's add that on top of it. So I just, I think this needs to change. I don't think we should just have to live with this.
I just like to also say, and like not to be too defensive, although it's going to come off as defensive. So the existing max, or the existing base mixed-use FAR in the high school zone is 0.3. So that is a one-story building that takes up one third of the lot. And when you look at the goals and policies that the planning that we have in the books now in our Winslow-Sub area plan, and then how they have been suggested for improvement by the planning commission, a one-story building that takes up one third of the lot is not what the goals and policies would say should be built in the high school.
I don't think anyone is saying that we should stick with one story building on high school. I think what everyone is saying is that if we're going to triple the density, then we should require affordable housing.
Yeah. Well, and the mixed use is a 0.5. So that's a one story building that takes up half the lot. So I guess, so
can
I mean, the planning commission, you can make recommendations about what should end up being the base FAR in your public hearing draft. That's completely fine.
Are the, how do I say this? If we had gone to this capacity analysis with, you know, requiring 100% affordable in order to get these FAR increases, would the capacity have come back saying, yeah, well, that's not likely gonna happen? And so you're not going to get the capacity that you need in order to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm asking.
I don't think
Sarah's
talking about 100% affordability. That'd be crazy, and then we would be stuck with the kind of buildings we're talking about. There's kind of two things here. One is figure out where can we actually get affordable housing, and will it be built, and what properties and what. And then the other is the separate issue, which is a good point. It's not a good use of land, right? So it's an opportunity where we've had our base FAR's been low, where we have, I think, thought for a long time we would have mandatory inclusionary zoning, that very few people could disagree that we need some upzoning there because it's just so low. So now it's an opportunity, because if we give that as a right to somebody, then we can say we get the mandatory inclusionary zoning. That's not the place we're gonna get the 60% AMI, right? And that's a whole other thing we have to solve for. But you're not saying
100%.
One story
no.
on one
no.
third of a lot, or 100%
no.
affordability.
No, mandatory
crazy.
Program would
yeah,
not be.
He said 25% and 20% of others. Because this was a
but
lot of wrestling
some.
That we went over.
Well,
yeah,
right. And what, you know, you can imagine that the higher the affordability obligation, so 25% is, you know, higher than most inclusionary zoning programs, right? So the higher the hurdle to participate, the lower the participation, right? And it's not, and it's all for low income or below, right? So if you're having that type of voluntary program, you're gonna have less participation. So there'll be more, you know.
So we're trying to find that sweet spot.
But if you wanted to do a mandatory program and have a lower number, you know, a 10% is what was in the DEIS, or 5%. So then you would, so then you'd have more market rate built at that higher FAR, right? to support the mandatory program. So But you might have more projects built because the obligation is less.
So wouldn't we expect commerce to come back?
That's what you were worried about is building more market rate, more market rate, as opposed to not that much more market rate, which is what your program is. It would produce some more market rate and some affordable housing, and then we're going to have additional affordable housing programs that hopefully get picked up by the public or nonprofit sector.
So we know that if we took these to 1.0, and on top of other bonuses like under parking, under, you know, height for parking or whatever, that there's no way we could get projects built if we said 10% of those need to be 80% and below.
I think we heard developers were even saying 5% was, that 10% was even maybe unrealistic, and it would maybe be more like 5%.
Yeah. I mean, I would not have expected more than 10%, but I'm just saying where, because it feels like we either hear like, well, you got to go up to 3 or 4 FAR to get anything, or we're down here, and isn't there somewhere in here?
And alternatives 2 and 3 looked at 2.5 as a max in the core, I think, in one of the alternatives, and up to 3.5 in high school. I think in alternative 2, with the 10%, with the 10% mandatory program. So
we're trying to find this sweet spot, right? And it's possible that it just doesn't exist with the options that we've been discussing. And so I think the direction that this capacity analysis has gone is to say, well, at least we can, we can create the typologies to get us to the numbers. It's, theoretically possible that this zoning would allow X number of buildings, whatever, to meet the goal. So if we have, if we then layer on a program that says, all right, the city is going to need the opportunity to buy units from a developer, like at cost, so that we can follow, what has worked for, the Oliver. Because obviously 10% mandatory is not going to get us anywhere, anywhere fast. And it's going to create a lot of bad will, and, people are going to say, oh, well, you're blowing up your capacity. And what's in there for Bainbridge? So what if there was a policy added on to this capacity analysis that says, in order to get to the 1.0 FAR, you have to give like a right of first refusal to the the city to provide the incentives to get us to whatever. It's either maybe some very high help to get to lower, to get to the 60% and below, or maybe less help to get to a higher AMI. And that's just what we would do when we have a revenue source, like maybe a levy or something else. And we get, we have to determine where that subsidy goes. And so if there's a right of first refusal or something like that, then we get the help of developers to build it. We don't have to come in, and maybe we say we want 50% of this proposed, given to us at cost, given to us with X sizes of units, and we will subsidize them. I mean, I could imagine that would allow us to get there, but obviously it's going to cost.
Can I just enter? I think those kind of ideas are really good and can be part of the solution. We don't have a lot of time, and we have Caitlin here, and we should talk about the principles. And there's only so much we can do. To me, the biggest thing that's happened, the most time-sensitive issue, is that it's new to the Planning Commission as well as the City Council, that there are recommendations that have gone forward to Commerce that are under review that are new. And I think they should be brought back to the Planning Commission on Thursday. And the Planning Commission should be able to, in a public forum, discuss them and decide whether they're going to be willing to endorse them.
I agree with that.
Yeah, we're going to make it real clear.
And then we got to go from there.
Yeah. All right. So we have, if you want to leave about 8 to 10 minutes for public comment. We have about a half an hour, and I'm just going to hand it over to you guys. You did some really great work, you and Leslie. So this is your opportunity to talk with Kate.
Yeah. Well,
can I add one thing to this? So we've got some the attendees that appear that they want to speak. Mm-hmm. You'll have an opportunity at the end when public comment's available. So you feel free to raise your hand at that time. But right now, there's just not the ability to speak.
Okay, we have a public comment at the end of the agenda.
Okay. Well, I know obviously we're unorganized and none of us are the chair, but I'll put out there that my hope would be that we could work from I've got a conflict of interest since I drafted them, but maybe potentially work from the draft that I integrated the two. I'd love to hear from Caitlin if she's been hearing anything from her subcommittee. But not saying that they're baked and done and ready to go, but
it's a start.
Yeah, hopefully the starting point, and us assessing maybe depending on where we all think we are, is this something we think we could propose some public process steps where this could be ready for prime time and come for the content update? That would be great, or not. So how, you know, where are we? So like again, I hope to hear from colleagues here, and including Caitlin. About that, but
well, we have them in these hard copies, so I would encourage you. Do you want a hard copy? We have extras.
Oh no, I'm fine here. Yeah, all right. Yeah, thank you. I first of all would love to thank Councilmember Snyder and Pytopoulos for diving in to what I know personally was a difficult kind of painstaking process, and so. I think both of them have really, really great components to them. I would support moving forward with Councilmember Hytopoulos' draft just because it maintains so much of the language that Riet heard from community members is important by tackling both the kind of principles and policies. By only going with the principles, I think we were finding that they became very long in our draft and in trying to make them succinct, I think we might lose things. We've heard, I think we can all agree words matter, and they don't always mean the same things to everyone. So keeping kind of as much of those terms that are important, you know, both from people that Riet had heard from and from people that we're hearing from now, about groundwater and abundant and all of these things that, you know, people have strong feelings about. And so I would support moving forward with Councilmember Hytopoulos' draft, and then, you know, I'm in agreement with what I've heard from Councilmember Nelson and others, and it was Riet's initial intent as well, that all advisory committees have a chance to also review and weigh in, and more community members, you know. So the more attention that these are getting towards that finalization phase, Riet isn't supportive, and Riet would as a body, then also, you know, provide additional comment when the other committees do as well.
I just wanted to point out, I think that having the red lines really important. That was important to me. We can all see what was let go of, what was added. And so I think that hopefully that could track along. So people are worried things are missing, that they might see they got moved or what have you. Really great transparency.
Mike, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I agree with Ms. Lombardi. First, though, I do want to say Councilmember Schneider's were really thoughtful, and I really enjoyed looking through them, and I saw in there a lot of work that she put towards trying to balance between the two and doing that work, and so I want to make sure to put that compliment out there, because it wasn't lost on me how much time she spent on that. I think what really has me leaning towards Councilmember Hytopoulos is really the policy language, because, well, and also the showing your work part too, because I think Councilmember Hytopoulos did an excellent job of taking what was already there, bringing in what Riet had done, really having that policy language underneath and really showing her work so we all know what happened every single word. So I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. And it's also clear to me how much work Councilmember Hytopoulos put into it. And so I, of course, want to thank both of them. And I also want to say that I agree with Ms. Lombardi around, I think, what I was saying before, which is trying to have more have the other subcommittees, like, you know, ETAC, the Climate Change Advisory Committee, Utilities Advisory Committee, all of our, you know, citizen advisory committees, have them give their input. Obviously, the Planning Commission too. And I think the only thing that concerns me is whether we have time for all of this in a full public process before our June deadline. You know, I think what I in general would push for would be light touch approach, because we have this deadline approaching. But if we are going to go down the road where we're making changes, I would support Councilmember Haitopoulos's. And I just thank everyone for their work on this.
I can jump in a little bit and say I'm totally fine supporting Kirsten's work. I agree that the red line is really important to show where things landed. My only two comments about what I was attempting that is different. One is I tried to use language that was very accessible without a lot of work. And so I eliminated words like hydrology because I'm not sure, you know, how many of us instantly know exactly what hydrology means and how it affects guiding principles, right? So that was a big goal of mine. And then the other one is just what is the, I guess we just need to agree that what the guiding principles are can be, can have so much packed into them, right? And I didn't want to pack too much in. I wanted to carve them out and say a guiding principle has a meaning that can be understood as one thing. And therefore, you don't need a 3.1, a 3.2, and a 3.3, because then it starts to feel like, you know, sections of the comp plan.
But you know, those have always been there, right? And they don't appear on our guiding principles.
Yeah.
So that's showing the work of, which I understood looking at, so looking at React and FACT, it's just like this, I never problem with all of these details, but where could they go? Because you want the product,
right,
which is the principles, which is a punchier kind of, you know, a step up from our current goals and, you know. So I don't want to eliminate the policies, but I'm also not suggesting at all that we start putting the policies everywhere with the principles. The principles should still come out as a one-pager succinct list that we could attach to our agendas again. They're only not attached to our agendas because we changed systems and they're supposed to get re-engaged to that.
Right.
So just to be clear, I absolutely, but one of my concerns, when I saw React's, again, I don't want to interrupt you actually.
No, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, I also want to put out there because it has to do with what I was thinking when I first saw them. I felt very defensive. I feel like we're in a very polarized political environment at the moment where our community's being put in a position of like people versus environment and equity versus, you know, whatever, right? Everybody's either a NIMBY or a YIMBY and there's nothing in between. And it's just been feeling so bad. And when we first received them, oh my God, these are voluminous and think they're going to be attacking, you know, like it's even enough with the environment, and then getting in them and both of them and bringing them together was a really healing experience. I guess is what I want to put out there. I really felt like I realized they were not at odds, and really looked that first one that I brought up to the top as a new one entirely in the words of React about the balancing, because that is what I believe this community has always been looking to do with the comp plan, is balancing our interests. So I just wanted to say, yeah, it took a little non sequitur what you're saying, because yes, I was also concerned. These are so voluminous, but they were good, and we needed to put that stuff somewhere.
Right.
And I think almost all of it has either gone into from React, has either gone into the principles or in the policies where appropriate. We're talking about an event in history or a particular element of the
right.
So. And I also want to say there was some chaff to cut out about, like, you know, that maybe we did say the word finite too many times, like it lost its power. I mean, I believe we have very finite important resources, but if you say it 10 times in every single element, it starts to sound a little hollow.
Right. So yeah, no, I'm fine supporting.
One thing that I either said out loud or said to myself that I would do in between the last steering committee and now, related to the guiding policies, is just to look at them and see, you know, are they similar to or duplicative of existing goals or policies in our elements right now? And most of them are. So I've just kind of made some crib notes about if we wanted to streamline this section of the introduction and have the guiding policies be moved into relevant elements under relevant goals or become goals in the comp plan update. You know, we can do that. Most of them would move into the land use element, particularly under goals 1 through 4. Some are very similar to policies already in the water resources and environmental element. So, or the culture, and one is nearly verbatim from a cultural element goal that we already have.
But isn't this the structure right now that they live in one place and then obviously distributed through the plan, we're pulling them in? So
yeah, that's,
And if they were identified that way, that would be great, right? In other words, the guiding principle is here, and then you're pulling in, you know, the policies as goals from other places, but we could retain the identification of them so that you could go back to them.
I was going to say, I mean, certainly if there's inconsistencies, we need to create consistencies and figure that out. On the other hand, if we don't have a place in the comprehensive plan where the policies live under the principles, then we've lost that attempt to capture what do we mean by that, right? So from the equity perspective, and specific, you know, references to things that have happened on the island. From the environmental perspective, things like, I mean, I know Ron wrote to us earlier and was concerned that the precautionary principle was gone, but it's not. It's in a policy. It was in a different policy before. It's in a policy. So you get to get that little, that fleshing out of more. What if, when we say this, the same thing that we want to be able to refer to on a daily basis, right? If we lose the policies, nobody can ever see a place where we understand what do we mean by that, which, you know, doesn't have to be as drafted. But I like that structure myself.
So I'm a little lost. Are we saying then? I mean, I think they should be redundant, right? Like,
right. That's what, exactly. And you can then go to a relevant element and see something that's the same or similar. But I don't want to lose. I don't know if Jennifer was suggesting that we pull them out, distribute them. I feel like at some point at the beginning, like in the introduction, like it is now, I think that you can see this whole.
Yeah, I agree. I think you should see them
and
also be able to trace them back. There should be a way
That's fine too. That's fine too. And if they wind up, especially since I've played with them, if it winds up being in stark contrast to something, then we should try to fix that.
Mike has a question.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I agree with Council Members Schneider and Hythopoulos. I would like to retain the policies under each of the guiding principles and then have them repeated in the elements also, because it tells us what those principles mean and they live there. But it's also a way of bringing together all the elements under the guiding principles. And so I would not support taking them out of the guiding principles and then distributing to the elements. I would leave them in both places.
Thanks. But then does it mean that all of the policies under each guiding principle should live somewhere else, right? And we should find a home for them if they don't already?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. That at least, or maybe not verbatim, but that they're consistent. Because otherwise they're kind of working.
Yeah, what do the policies do right now? I'm sorry I didn't go into all the elements. This was more time than I had.
Yeah, but she did.
But it's structurally. Did they originally, does the current draft of the comp plan take the policies and then take those verbatim from out and also duplicate them? No. And they overlap.
They are very similar. Both, except for the last one that related to good governance. You know, there's some mention of good governance was not as laid out as clearly in your draft, and not as I would say in the new you know, the displacement and recognizing previous exclusion, that's proposed to be added to the housing element, but it's not there right now. So yeah, no, I don't think there's anything in the guiding policies that they exist today or as proposed that is in conflict. I just think, and if you want to keep them fine, if you want us to make a note, like, see also land use element goal two.
Yeah,
you know, we could
right.
do that. For,
I think,
like, I see.
I think that would be really great to show that the guiding principles are supported by the rest of the conflict.
And then if there's one that doesn't have that, then we might want to ask why,
right?
If there's one that we can't find a reference for, then maybe that needs to be added into one of the elements.
That's
right.
Interesting, yeah.
But are we being really clear about these guiding policies? that the reason we're including them in the introduction is because in some way or sense, they are higher importance or higher emphasis than the other policies that are throughout the conflict. Like we're putting them here because
we're cherry picking.
Like these, if we were to boil our city down into, you know, something simplistic, this is what we are. This is what we intend on doing.
Yeah.
So are we really clear on that? Like these policies are a level above the other policies.
Or it would be really nice if we could have each guiding policy relate to a goal.
Yeah, right.
That would
well,
be,
then you're getting into weird. Then we need to find another name for guiding policies. It's like goals and policies and the rest.
Which maybe we
yeah.
do. I think that's a little confusing anyway.
Little,
already
yeah.
we have principle,
yeah.
policy, goal policy that
yeah.
structures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, if we had heard that, oh, oops, these policies are currently already somehow verbatim mm-hmm. distributed and now there's a whole other, but if it's a level of improvement we could
yeah.
do, we don't have to necessarily do it on this timeline. I mean, as far as staff, I'm going to work on that and so forth right now, right? But we could say that we would like to. I'm just thinking,
absolutely.
I don't want to hold up this work that's the momentum that's happened
yeah.
because a whole other level. But otherwise, yeah, in a perfect world, you could kind of go up and down probably from seeing them getting into the plan and back up.
Yeah, I think the only, you know, there's less about like there are in the economic element, there is. I think one goal or policy about, you know, being a good steward of public funds, but there definitely is less about emergency management in the comprehensive plan. So like guiding policy 7.4, there's not a corresponding place that lives in the current comprehensive plan. So that's not to say that we need it to, because we have a whole community emergency management plan or city emergency management plan.
Yeah, but that is weird.
You know?
That's a really important thing for an island city. And so even if we're doing well at it right now, it should
yeah.
be in our comprehensive plan.
And there's, it's kind of more indirectly referenced
yeah.
related to planning for, planning for resilience,
yeah.
both in like from the utilities perspective and then from the climate
that's
change
mm-hmm.
perspective,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not as much as using emergency management lingo. Is what's in the current comprehensive plan.
Well, maybe it doesn't need to only refer to the comprehensive plan goals and principles. Like, could it refer to other documents?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the one you're just
yeah.
the emergency management plan, whatever it is. That,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because we do, you know, our comprehensive plan, one of the changes we made the last time we did the periodic update was to not repeat all of our other plans as appendices, but to adopt them by reference so that if they got updated, we wouldn't have to update the comprehensive plan. But, you know, whereas if they were an appendix, then we'd have to update the comprehensive plan to like.
Has everybody had a conversation about adopting the emergency? Do we have an actual plan for emergency preparedness? Or
we do now. We didn't.
So we could amend, we could adopt
yeah.
that.
Yeah, correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think we probably should, whether that's in capital facilities or
mm-hmm.
in environment or land, you know. Right now, most of the plans we're adopting by reference. You'll see them in your capital facilities draft element. It's in your packet for this week. So like the groundwater management plan is being added to that list of plans adopted by reference.
Is it a good idea to discuss like how we socialize this in the community?
Yeah, Well, great. Next steps for one
yeah.
thing. I mean, I would like to think we time. Send it to the committees for comments. All of them react. This needs to be pretty. Comes back. I think we asked the council to okay it coming back here for us to pull together and talk about that. And ultimately, it needs to go to either the planning commission if there's time. So it needs to go somewhere for the public too.
Yeah. Can you take that again so I can catch it?
I'm thinking that right now we take what we have and we send it to all the committees. We can put it on the website, whatever as well. I mean, but we always want public comment continually, but through the committees back to here for us to maybe give our thoughts. I mean, we're a small body that could work on things easier than the full council. Just a thought, but I'd want the
yep.
council
and
to agree.
And by when under this time frame where you know
well,
with more
we need to realistically provide for all the committees to have met whatever that cycle is. We
yes.
have to put it on their agendas for one cycle of committee meetings.
1 to 2 months. You know, just because sometimes they don't need
yeah.
to have stuff like that.
Well, we could ask them to designate a subcommittee. I don't know that we want to wait more than a month for that rotation. We don't have
time. Yeah, I mean again, we would ask for them to accelerate this as a priority action, but
yeah.
Yeah,
but it needs to get to a place where it comes to the planning commission and then and or to the council for public comment too.
It would be good if some guidance, because I think that's what the planning commission requested from the steering committee, was feedback as far as what approach for the guiding principles for the update. It would be good if we had a little bit of direction today, because then the planning commission, you know, you could provide that feedback this Thursday or at your meeting on the 9th. And, you know, we are going to have a public hearing draft with an updated comp plan done before this steering committee meets again. Because if the planning commission is going to have their public hearing on April 23rd,
yeah, I mean,
then,
we could ask all the advisory committees to try to give us feedback by Monday, April 20th. That doesn't really help the public hearing on the 23rd by the planning commission. It does, yeah, Sarah.
But it could be public hearing comments from those advisory committees,
yeah.
you know, to be taken under consideration.
I mean, that could go into the packet for them as well on the 23rd.
If this
would be too late.
If Kirsho's draft is the draft that's going to be circulated, can the council not just say designate this as the working draft and it's going to be in the public hearing draft and then we'll get even more comment on it?
We would get a lot more comment, including by the advisory committee, just because that's one of the things that we do.
Could I just request also that my version gets circulated with, even as we are advocating for yours? I mean, so for instance, I'm just looking here at my number 8, preserve and enrich a strong sense of community. And then there's detail after that. I'm not sure I see a comparable, you know, in these others.
Yeah,
and
guiding principle 7, strengthen the sustainability resilience by meeting essential need for its residents, preserving a strong sense of community and preparing for natural disasters and other disruptive events. I don't know. I knew I wanted to get that in there because I thought that was really important. But
yeah,
I'm not saying it's good enough, but yeah.
But that
right.
could be a comment, Leslie.
Yeah.
But that can just be,
yeah.
But if somebody sees the comparison, there might be some suggestions that could,
yeah.
you know, lean that direction. Because like, for instance, you know, I mean, just to show that I'm consistent, you know, I brought to this group the idea of placemaking and we had a nice presentation and we're supposed to be sort of increasing stuff like that in our community. And I've seen nothing about that since then because we're all focused on the essentials of affordable housing. So I'm sad about that. And so therefore it's meaningful to me that we hold a place in the guiding principles that says our gathering places are important, right?
I think that's great. I think it just needs to be clear that so we don't have like one committee starts amending your draft and another committee.
No, I agree.
Amendments to the other draft.
So it's just sort of for contrast and input,
yeah.
but there is a recommended version.
Is it truly contrast? Wouldn't it be additive? Not.
I think it's additive. I mean,
yeah.
I think for me. For
I think
me,
what I would suggest is that you reduce those two. You figure out where the intersect, where it's not working for you, and bring that forward as recommended changes to whatever process we're doing.
Or if Sarah's idea grows, and I think it's a good one, that you, Leslie, find where you find gaps in the draft that Kirsten wants us, through Sarah's idea, to be part of the public planning commission draft, which you would talk to the rest of your council people about, ostensibly tomorrow afternoon, or evening rather. In the meantime, you find out how to amend that draft with things that you believe are needed.
Missing or not strong enough.
Yes, thank you.
Well, we are not, or my talking about is the step where we would make any changes. That's where I was, I love all this, but I was kind of originally trying to bring it back here somehow, or some subcommittee level. How do we work with credibly? I mean, are you guys going to do this out on the dais? Is that what's going to happen next? Or should we bring it back to a subcommittee or back to the steering committee to integrate all potential changes?
I'm just worried about we're running out of time.
At the end of the public
hearing, it's going to be wasteful.
Mike?
Yeah, sorry about that. I like Kirsten's idea of sending it out to the various citizen committees, getting feedback, and then bringing it back here before it then goes to the planning commission for a public participation meeting. I'm a little bit leery of sort of having this draft just go directly to the public participation meeting, because I feel like we should hear from the citizen advisory committees in case there needs to be changes before we send it out to the public. But I think this also sort of flags why I had concerns about the process in general, is because, you know, this is the first draft, and all of a sudden we're told, well, it needs to be done within the next month because we have this public participation hearing. So I guess the question I have is actually two questions. One, can we do an extra steering committee meeting before the next steering committee meeting, like a special steering committee meeting, so that we have the time to do it? Or two, can we do a separate public participation meeting by the Planning Commission for just the guiding principles? Because obviously this is going to be something that gets a lot of comments by the public. Thank you.
Do we have to adopt the draft at the end of the public hearing, the Planning Commission public hearing? That's not the intent, right?
Well, part of the schedule is we have to move it on to council.
Yeah, but literally at the end of that meeting.
Well,
so there's
literally, it's not an essential part, but it's important to this community, and we're trying very hard to have it be part of the overall package.
Just, but how would the planning commission in that meeting
appropriate?
Yeah,
we're looking to add a planning commission meeting just because, you know, of the amount of stuff that you guys have to review. So we're going to talk about that this week.
Maybe at the end of
April.
Next
question. I mean, like, for instance,
CAC is tonight, so we can present that tonight. I'm just trying to figure out. On the problem, I'm on the. I mean, I'm your liaisons. We could certainly say, you guys, we want to do a subcommittee.
Thank you.
That you so
we
can
make feeling that firm and like
we can make you a copy to hand out to them.
All
so right, April 13th.
Okay. So then they could get that and have time leading up to that to work. I'm just trying to think like how we can actually reach out to our committees and get the feedback before we're talking and pull all the feedback together.
So the public hearing draft is a draft that can be amended.
Correct.
Council can amend it.
Yeah, correct.
And I just think the best way to get it in front of the public is for it to be in the Planning Commission's public hearing draft. I think if it's not in there and then we try to change it, then the criticism is going to fly. And so, and I think it's understanding that's part of getting comments from committees, but we also need to get comments from the public. And that it's, in my mind, is the best way to get public comment is at the public hearing and have it in the draft.
Not adopted, like you're asking. So it's there, we pull all this the information together, and then we do bring it back somewhere like this or to some subcommittee to try to integrate changes based on that.
Well, and would it make sense to kind of integrate Leslie's guiding principle proposals? You know, so Kirsten, yours would be like option one, and then the paired, you know, similar topic proposal from Leslie can be right below it, option two, as opposed to being in a
for me, the
three pages
about
later.
Your two proposals.
Okay.
Is. And one of the reasons I I kind of favor Kirsten's draft is one, the formatting, but also the fact that it has the track changes. And it's easy for people to see what has changed. And then also you identified, you highlighted from React's drafts and noted this language went here. So it's easy to see,
to follow along.
We have to be out of this room in 10 minutes, and we have people who wish to give public comments, so we have to come to some sort of action.
But I think Leslie should go along, but I think it should be clear that so we don't get emails and comments that we should change this draft this way, and other people are saying right. Change this one, the other, that it's changes are made to a draft.
Yes.
I agree. I think we should go out with one draft. I think it'd get too confusing to have multiple drafts, especially considering the complexity of this process already.
And then for as a point of efficiency, can we put it in the public hearing draft and here and also circulate it to the advisory committees?
Yes.
From this point forward,
can we agree where we focus it? And we need to go to public comment. Can we agree where it goes after that to be processed?
What do you suggest?
Yeah, well, you don't. We're taking public comment. Where are we potentially integrating all the public comment?
Well, I think that's up to the planning.
Okay, well, we'll have to
and how they end up making a recommendation to council, and then council can have their own discussion, correct?
Sorry, we're having an extra public planning commission
we're
meeting.
We're looking to, we haven't done that yet.
We could, and that's where we hear all the public, that's the public hearing on the guiding principles.
Oh, no,
no,
it
would be the
same having
hearing.
A public hearing on
the
hearing.
Or, well, I mean, it, so.
The public hearing is on the
23rd.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about something.
So we'll defer to the Planning Commission to decide, since we need to take public comments on whether or not at the after having received that comment, they would like it to come back here or somewhere else for us to do work on it. Otherwise, it feels like a little disingenuous that we're not going to actually incorporate.
Can you send something to us?
Okay. So should we start since we're saying we're going to end?
Yeah.
Yes. We didn't have a sign up sheet, but I know Ron's standing up. Do you want to
go back?
Do you need to come closer for the
closer one?
Yeah. Well, I'll speak very briefly. I sent an email to Kirsten Autopoulos, and that could be shared with the steering committee. The first part of the meeting raised a lot of questions and potential comments for me, but that's everything all together. So.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so hi everybody. Stand here.
Perfect.
As long as I can hear you. So, as you know, we're working on a groundwater management plan, and it should have some information in about the island's capacity. And all this growth and stuff you're talking about is directly connected to that, because the more people we have, the more water we use, the more impervious surfaces we get, and more opportunity for polluting our groundwater. So I continue to see a disconnect between that, the planning process of comp plan and the groundwater management plan. And as far as I can tell, the city council and many of you on the planning commission are fine with just going ahead with the comp plan, and then we'll worry about the groundwater management plan later. And these should be working together. The groundwater management plan should be incorporated into the comp plan. It should inform the comp plan and my growth we're going to plan for. And I have to wonder, does Commerce know we're working on a groundwater management plan? That's something they've been told, because preserving, protecting groundwater is just as important as housing, if not more, for a sole source aquifer island like Bainbridge Island. Mismanaging our aquifers could have catastrophic effects that we cannot take a chance on. We have to plan carefully so that that doesn't happen. We don't get seawater intrusion or other types of pollution and issues with our groundwater, even considering stream flows as well. So I'm concerned about this commerce interjecting itself into our planning process. This is something the city council has decided to allow them to do. They don't really have the authority to just come in and elbow their way into our planning process. So I don't want to take up too much time in case anybody wants to comment, but I want to say something about 1220. There's this thing, there seems to be this opinion that's been promoted by the planning department that 1220 is a holy grail of what we have to do. 220 1220 is implemented in the Growth Management Act, and it's not the only requirement in the Growth Management Act. It's related to housing, obviously. There's nothing in the Growth Management Act that prioritizes housing over protection of the environment, protection of groundwater resources. The word mandate isn't in the Growth Management Act. The word shall is in there, but it's applied to a lot of things, including protection of groundwater. So I won't hog any more time in case somebody else wants to speak. You've got more things you want to finish your meeting with. But please think about it. The groundwater management plan. The guiding principles are what they are for a reason, because all too often we're willing to forget about the limitations of our island when we're planning for the future. So thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Ron. Is there anybody online, Marlene, that has their hand up for public comment?
Clayton had raised his hand, but I don't see a hand raised at this moment.
Let's go back, just give him time. See if their hand is raised. Okay, the hand is not raised.
Clayton, are you wishing to make a comment?
Probably can't talk. He has to raise his hand, and then I can allow him to speak.
Yeah. I know, that's what I was.
Okay. Thank you. And any final thoughts now that we have a couple of minutes? Sarah's going to help inform the Planning Commission of the path forward. Leslie, are you okay with how things are going to proceed?
So I think what I'm hearing is that mine's not even going to be put out there at all.
No. That isn't what I heard.
Okay. I mean, I just want it to be kind of like a resource. It's not a draft, right? It's just an alternative view that shows how things might be a little bit different.
Feel like it would be more effective if you decided what you would propose to change.
Right.
Just be honest. Otherwise, if you just said, you know what, in particular, there's not enough community emphasis. I think it got buried in the emergency preparedness. So, I mean, that would be the thought, but just target it.
Could Leslie have the tractor changes and add comments so that they show up directly in the same red line version as all of the formatting?
And when would that get done by? Well, no, seriously.
Yeah,
I need a deadline.
Good question.
Yeah.
No, would that be for the Planning Commission?
Well, it would just be in whatever version goes out, just if we're concerned about it being confusing. I mean, I think the concern about it being confusing seems like a bigger issue with the public than it does with the committees.
Right.
So
just
maybe with the committees, they both go out by the time it goes out to the public.
Sure.
There's comments from you and those committees embedded into the document that goes.
Well, if I just download your document that you attached a while back, I can go into that and make some 20 proposed changes and or comment. And who am I sending it to? Sending it.
Okay. Well, and what I was thinking is
we could also work together to try to pull things together and see if that works.
Sure.
And shouldn't perhaps React's proposal kind of email to council?
Yeah.
Kind of be part of the telling the story.
It's the background. Like,
Leslie, would you be willing to look at where you would amend or comment on Kirsten's draft by the end of this week?
Mm-hmm.
And then give it to Sarah for the Planning Commission?
I can give it to Sarah, or I can give it to Jennifer, wherever.
Both.
I need to both.
But not for Planning Commission to see this week, because then we would need it before then.
Yeah, that's true. All right. We'll circulate it to all steering committee members as well. Mike, you have your hand up. We have a couple minutes.
Yeah, real quick. I just want to make sure that the Planning Commission takes up this issue about the increase in base FAR. I think that's a huge issue that we need to address. And then second, I think I saw on the council agenda for tomorrow, I have to miss it because I'm traveling for work, a communication around a recommendation from the steering committee around the guiding principles. And so I'm just, is somebody going to make a recommendation from us to council and have them sort of vote around the process as far as sending it to the citizen committees and then to the Planning Commission and that whole process as we described it?
Yeah, we're going to talk about it tomorrow. So I had asked for that to be an item tomorrow night. And actually, I realized too, I want to make sure that Caitlin feels like she has some idea what we're talking about doing, because I mean, we are targetly sending it to Race Equity, CCAC, and Hanover in addition to this. You feel like it makes sense.
I appreciate very much if you would include REAC's initial email, help kind of dispel some sense that REAC was trying to push something through the back door. So yes, this is exactly in line with us wanting the public.
So tomorrow, this is right, we need to be prepared tomorrow night to be able to say what's happening. So what we understand is happening is that this packet basically is going to the committees for comment. And then it's ultimately the draft with the various comments, including I think the committees would go to REAC because nobody, REAC to Planning Commission on the 23rd because nobody's talking about integrating anything before then.
Yeah, I thought Sarah had a different plan.
I don't think we can integrate by.
No, I think we either.
We don't have the time.
So we have to have.
We'll take all the committee comments with the public comment we get.
Yep.
And then.
We've done that before.
Right. Yeah. So the packet, so comments that have yet to come from the committees will get married up in the packet that's in front of you. I mean, otherwise.
If they could be in the packet as part of the public hearing.
Yeah. Not integrated, but just as a body of comments.
So we'll get the married version by the end of the week, and then we'll circulate that, and we'll include it in the Planning Commission next meeting. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.